The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
There's a sense of deja vu about this year, lads, after what happened last year, and the snow came and the fixture chaos came, and now we have a situation that the hurling final is going to be put back to the last day of March. So we're backs against the wall here, JJ. JJ and Brian are here with me as usual. Backs against the wall, any more bad weather and the April for club is gone.
So you can never predict this one, you know. We couldn't see this coming whatsoever at all, couldn't we not?
Who would have thought bad weather again in Ireland at this time of the year?
It's a disaster again, like, you know what I mean? But again, fair enough, no problem at all. Watlog Field can't play it. Obviously, the duty care for the players is huge. But
yeah,
it's just the supporters and fans going to these games, travelling down there as well. Obviously, if you know at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning that either that pitch is playable or not, make that call in. Whether it's a referee's call and he has to be at the ground to see it, shouldn't he be consulting the groundsman there? Their referee should be ringing the groundsman to see what kind of condition is it in, what's the weather like down there. When they get down there, they make a call straight away just to let fans come in. And a lot of lads paid into the game, and they're told just to look, hold on to your ticket, as this mightn't go ahead. And then they're sitting down in the stand, made the effort of going to the game. Like, it wasn't a great day yesterday at all. You knew right well the game wasn't going to go ahead. Just need to, there has to be a protocol in place there to say, right, 10 o'clock in the morning, if it's going to be played, just call it off there. And then, like,
that's the thing. I can understand why they're giving it to the last minute, Brian, because they're under so much pressure with this bloody schedule that is so tight, and there's no wiggle room, that supporters are end up getting shafted like this, that they're giving it every chance to get to be played. When, like, I mean, how hard is it to get a referee to come 3 hours early and call the game off? Like, I mean, like JJ said, it's obvious in most cases.
Yeah, it is obvious, but you'd have to feel for some of the supporters. Imagine driving from Galway.
The Galway supporters. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah, like, that is horrendous now, without getting over there and then realising. I suppose, look, in other sports, it can be called off a lot sooner, maybe because the referees are maybe professional, whereas obviously in GAA, they're not getting a lot of money, those referees. They are doing it. I know they're getting their basic expenses, but they are doing it for prestige as much as everything else too. So ask them to be there 3 hours beforehand. You'd want to be significantly increasing their expenses if you're asking that of them, to be fair.
Yeah, maybe it's unfair ask. I actually had a football match, just when you mentioned the referee, he landed yesterday morning in just the jersey, and just the referee's jersey, said, "This is one hardy whore coming across the across the field here for it." But you're right, like, I mean, they are amateurs. I don't know, surely there is a better protocol, like you said, JJ, to have the game called off. That, why do you need a referee to know that bloody there's water all over the pitch, this slitter isn't going to bounce, it's going to get stuck? Do you need a referee to call that off, or do you get both county board chairmen, both county managers, or whatever?
I think the county board chairman should be in consultation with the groundsman. The groundsman knows their own field better than anyone else in the country at the moment, you know. So yeah, I think the county board chairman should be talking to groundsmen, saying, right, is it playable or not? Is it 50-50, 70-30, or what's your position on this? Because, again, they know the ground more than anyone else. Like, but again, yesterday, like, you're the last minute call on it, but you'd wonder if, say, the referee in the Limerick Clare match knew the rest of them weren't going ahead, would he have pulled it? Like, you know what I mean? Because was he under pressure to actually go ahead and play the game? Because obviously they thought the fixture, they had to play the game that particular day. But if he knew the other two games weren't going ahead, he might have just said, right, okay, there is going to be another game on next weekend, we'll just pull it because it's safety of the players or not. But I know it went ahead, no one got injured, lucky enough, but it seemed to be, it was snow coming down in the middle of the field as well. Like, you know, it wasn't great circumstances for any sport to be watching or any players to be playing on it either, you know.
Yeah, I saw one or two people complaining on Twitter, Brian, saying it was the glamorous Division 1A games and the glamorous Division 1B game, all the high profile games were called off. Then you have Carlo and Offaly and Laois and Dublin playing in conditions that weren't really good for hurling, and because they weren't the very top games, they weren't called off. Is there anything in that, or is that just complaining for nothing?
I think that's just unfortunate in this situation. Look, fair play to the couple of teams that did get out there. I played yesterday morning as well, and it was a nightmare. It was so cold, so wet. If I went to ride the ball, you came up with more muck than the ball. So it wasn't, it wouldn't have been my favourite thing now. It wouldn't have been my cup of tea, that type of hurling. But yeah, look, in terms of trying to, I suppose the referee is the only impartial person in terms of calling off a game, whereas groundsmen, county board chairman, they might be at loggerheads over whether the game should go ahead, and then obviously it's up to the referee, the only impartial person in the situation, because we know if it filters down to club level, there's plenty of strokes can be pulled where teams know if players missing, you know, and don't want games to go ahead. I know that's down at lower levels, at county level obviously it's different, but I suppose they're trying to get some sort of conformity that works down across every level. But you know, it's a tough one. It's not an easy fix, and I do feel for the supporters because they are the ones caught in the middle of all of this. But going back to your original question in terms of the Division 1 games, I think, look, in fairness, I think it was quite obvious that the fields couldn't be played on. Actually, going back, that reminds me of a game we played against Laois in Port Laois. It was around 2005, I think it was, maybe 2006. And because it was live on telly, it went ahead, and there was about, no exaggeration, there was about 3 inches of water on the field that day. It was absolutely scandalous. But I think that there was huge pressure that the game had to go ahead. It was the televised live game for the day. And I can recall one of my best mates, Barry Teaton, going to a ball after about 30 seconds and ended up doing a Klinsmann in the middle of the water. Just being drowned. Like, it was that bad, and I'm not exaggerating. The water was coming in up over my boots. Like it was just ridiculous. And I was marking none other than a lovely Claire Healy, like a dog of a corner back then. So it's a lad to be marking on such a day as well.
Jeez, yeah, that would be. He probably prayed for rain the night before, Healy, just to really dog you out of it completely. But now that you mention it, you played a game yesterday. I'd say at least you started the game. I went playing intermediate football yesterday and was on the bench. It was heartbreaking, lads. It was freezing. So went running across the kind of, there's a kind of a soggy pitch in Port Laois across to the pitch we're playing on. And by the time I'd even reached the pitch we're playing on for the warm up, my feet were wet. So I knew then straight. I've enough experience to know wet feet, subs bench, all for fuck's sake. And like, it was 2 degrees in the car when it was pulling up. So I was immediately in bad form. So by the time I actually got brought on, I got maybe 12 or 15 minutes. I actually wanted to say, I don't want to go on, I'm freezing. I don't want to go.
I don't need this.
And then I didn't want to look like I was stagging. And you know, so I was in an awful kind of situation where I did not want to come onto that field.
I don't know if you remember the Archie ad from years ago where the sub is asked to come on and he puts his hand out and then sees the rain and he goes, nah, not today.
Well, I swear to God, any player around the country that tugged out and played with your club or county yesterday deserve a lot of credit, because that's just a real vocation when you're going out in conditions like that. And the referee in just a jersey comes landing in, like, probably only getting what would he be getting off each club? 20 quid each?
40 quid each,
and he coming out to run around that. I swear to God, it's a very special organisation. I know we give out about it a lot, lads, but isn't it a very special organisation to do that kind of thing? So the only game that we saw, lads, because obviously Tipperary Cork was down to be on TG Cahir and that was replaced by Roscommon Dublin. Jeez, there was so much football on this weekend. No hurling at all. So all we can talk about this game was just the highlights we saw on League Sunday last night. So, like, I mean, the big talking point out of League Sunday for me last night was Davy Fitzgerald's carry-on. JJ, I'll start with you. Yeah. Like, very unusual carry-on from him. Seemed to be unbelievably hyped up and pulled across Galan for the penalty across his knee. And then Galan got up and Davy Fitzgerald attacked him. Like, Galan had done something to him. Yeah. So, number one, he hits Galan across the knee with the hurl. Then he runs at him and hits him a shoulder. Then Galan grabs him by the neck, like, pinches his neck, and Davy Fitzgerald falls down
like a ton of rigs.
Like, it was almost like Galan had some special power in his hand. That, you know, that kind of Star Trek Tripling. Vulcan, the Vulcan thing that Spock used to do.
One inch punch.
Straight away, like, he's Bruce Lee. So now Davy, who's 6'3", he's lying rolling around the ground, and Galan looks like he has superpowers.
Yeah, it was. The only thing, probably local Derby, he's wound up for the game as well. The only thing I can think of what he was doing for that penalty was that he hoped that Galan would react and then get the obviously
made wrong too, though, isn't it?
It is wrong, all right, but again, circumstances, you have to do what you have to do now to get this decision reversed. But he didn't, and the best thing was when he fell on the ground, he just told to get back up again.
Yeah.
You're acting a fool here. Get back up again. You're embarrassing yourself. Get back on again. Now, it was. He done it a couple of times during that game as well. So, look, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. It's the first time I've seen him doing it. But if this thing happens, it happens. I'd say referees will cop onto a lot more. Opposing managers will cop onto a lot more. Even opposing players will cop onto a lot more. So I'm hoping now it's only a one-off from Davey. Because, look, again, he's 6'3", 6'4", and 14-15 stone.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be falling to the ground that easy, to be
fair. Well, we don't know about Galan's superpowers. That's the thing. Well, like, I mean, JJ Bryan says that we saw it once, we don't want to see it again. We actually saw it again in the same game. So at the very end then, he's celebrating and he's going, yeah, yeah, and all this, and he's clearly trash talking lads, and Keane Lynch got a bit pissed off with this, and he just kind of came up and bumped them. Their two helmets kind of might have made a bit of contact, but nothing in it. Now he's down holding his face. He's a face guard on him. Sure, his face would be perfectly fine. There was no impact at all. So, like, he made a show of himself, Davey Fitzgerald really did. And I'm sure when he looks that, like, in fairness to Davey Fitzgerald, and we saw it in football terms, we saw it with our man Donegal, lad. You can, even if you're not that type of player, you can lose your mind a little bit in a game that there was a lot of niggly stuff and there was clearly a lot of hard man stuff going on off the ball and in that game, and players that wouldn't usually act like that, maybe he just lost his mind a little bit.
Yeah, hopefully that's what it was, but it was embarrassing for him now, I have to say. And mind, we were singing his praises last week.
Yeah.
And I was defending hurling its virtues a couple of weeks ago, saying there's no diving in hurling, we don't have that. And then Davey comes along and absolutely ruins my theory. No, both of them were embarrassing, though, being honest. And I'm sure he knows that better than anyone. You don't like to see that creep into the game. And, you know, it is a trait. Like, there's nothing hardy about that. Like, it is a trait. It's probably... It's not, I won't say creeping in, but you can see it from time to time, this kind of rubbish of burying a lad, and then the minute someone touches you, you're lying down yourself rolling on the ground. Like, I don't find that one bit tough, I have to say. If you're going to give it to a lad, you can expect it back, as far as I'm concerned, and the two you can get on with, and like it or lump it, it's a man's game at the end of the day. And like, the referee should know when, you know, you don't mind a little bit of sorting out. Don't be sending them off too soon or yellow carding too soon either. There's an element of that, or else the whole manliness is going to go out of the game and we're going to lose, you know, all respect for it. And I think that's one thing that we enjoy about hurling at the moment, is the fact that we know when there's a bit of intent there, and we know when there's just a little bit of sorting out to be done.
Yeah, there's nothing worse, JJ, and you see it in hurling all the time. There's two lads standing beside each other, and I don't know how you can take it. Like, I mean, it's just obviously from getting the butt of the hurl so many times, you don't feel it as much, and you're both kind of doing it to each other. And, like, I mean, whatever. Yes. Like, you see it enough to know that it's obviously not hurting you that much, but then one lad might do it, another lad might do it, and then the other lad goes down.
Yeah.
Well, you've just been doing it to each other. Yeah. You know, it's sneaky, really, isn't it?
It's preempted, because, look, if I hit you hit me, I'm going to hit the ground. The lad retaliates is going to be the person that hits, you know what I mean? So that's it is there for it. But I don't mind, look, if you're going starting it out with man on man, no issues whatsoever. You're often seeing any good referees, two lads are shoulding each other, the game is played on, two lads are still shoulding each other, looking at each other, what are we doing here? We're just wasting our time, the game is playing on, so we'll just forget about it. Like, but what I don't like is creeping in the game, is people shouting in people's face. Their hands are down and they're shouting in people's face, and you're kind of saying, that's not manly either, like, you know what I mean? You're looking for your action again. It's all kind of preempting this. I mean, if I do this now, this lad's going to react. And I don't know, is it going down to kind of knowing your opposition players a little bit too well, that this lad is hot-headed a bit so he can react?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's coming into play now or not, but one thing I can stand on a field is someone just shouting in someone's face and then kind of running off or laughing in their face or something like that. It's probably the most ignorant thing you can do on the field, to be honest.
Definitely. That's a point JJ makes there. They definitely know each other well, and John Kiley said after the game, Brian, that there's a mutual respect there. Now, I didn't see much mutual respect. I'd say some of the younger lads in college together would respect each other, but there's definitely lads on both those teams that don't really respect each other.
Definitely, yeah. There's a huge rivalry there, and it was on the edge yesterday, I have to say. And I suppose conditions definitely would have lent itself to that as well, because in that mucky weather there was a lot of rucks, and it allowed for all the players coming flying in at times. And look, we've seen it right before the throw in as well. But in fairness, I think it was Marty Morrissey last night in commentary, he did highlight it. You know, there was times the referee should have just let it go, like, and don't be going in to talk to them sometimes, because you're allowing this situation to fester. So
right.
Like, sometimes let the play go on, and as JJ says, the two of them are going to turn around like, and eventually break it up. Like, you know what I mean? There's enough cop on there now with intercounty that, you know, you might get like a little bit of sorting out, but there's no major malice done at intercounty level in hurling, because there's cameras everywhere, there's linesmen, there's sport officials, everyone, umpires watching you at this stage. So that kind of there's no real damage done as far as I'm concerned. So just let lads sort it out and get on with the play. The more open you leave the game, the better it is. And we've seen that down through the years. I think that's the one gripe that hurling people have, is that, you know, we don't want to see the stop start nature of hurling and the constant freeze. It's kind of like, let it go. Brian Gavin obviously was the master of that as a referee, and JJ let appreciate that one. No, but it was, to be fair, because look, there's no rules, such as common sense in the rule book, but he had common sense and he applied it to hurling. So like, that's really, really important.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And there was only one referee better than Brian Gavin for that, and that was Brian Cody in the A versus B. He'd lose his whistle altogether. Yeah. One, a quick one that crossed my mind when I was watching the highlights, is the very first ball that went in, Toohey, the Clare goalkeeper, came out and he took the ball on his hurl and he miscontrolled it. And I was just thinking, why didn't he catch that? And then I was wondering, if you're catching a ball waist height, where your hand is an underhanded catch, is that a really difficult thing to do? And are you better off take it on the hurl in that situation, JJ?
I'd say he was just kind of, he was in a sprinting out now, and he probably taken on the hurl. But no, when you're catching underneath hand, it's a bit easier, because your ball coming head high, you're trying to catch it or grab it like that. But when the ball is kind of falling into your hand, it's actually easier to catch it that way, right? But I'd say he just wanted to control. He wanted to get out there. I say he was on top of the ball before he realised it, and then he wanted to take a touch on the hurl. He forgot about the circumstances of the wind and rain and everything like that as well. And hurl is probably wet there as well, so the ball would just fly off the hurl there as well. Like, you know,
right.
But no, it is easier kind of if the ball is just falling down, catch it underhand rather than overhand, like head high like that.
Ah, okay. So maybe he lost it in the air, baby Brian, and it was easier to do it, take it on her, because he wouldn't be, in general play, he wouldn't be using the hurl with the huge boss. That's just for the puck outs.
He would, you know, he'd still be using the big hurl all the time, yeah.
Oh, would he, yeah?
Yeah, he would, yeah. At this stage now, a lot of keepers don't even change their hurls. They're using a lot of the same hurl, both for puck out and goal, that they had thrown it out to the 6-yard box. It's kind of gone.
Is it?
Yeah, so they tend to use a lot of, so there's the odd goalie up and down the country will still use maybe the cool tech or something to get the extra few yards, but a lot of keepers use the same hurl now throughout the whole game. But yeah, I'd say, like what JJ said, could have misjudged the flight of the ball and just, it was on him before he knew it and just went with the hurl. Look, it's personal preference at times. It's a split second decision, so you know, you're not preempting it, really.
Right, okay, fair enough. Rory Hayes, the two last frees. Very harsh, the free on Mulcahy, I thought, for that young fella.
Yeah.
I didn't think he fouled Mulcahy. Now, he put his hand on Casey's back, and Casey made the most of it. It didn't look like the most aggressive punch in the world, but it was inexperience. He's a lively little player, Hayes. We obviously didn't see him yesterday, but I saw enough of him in the other games. He's got great pace, but he showed his inexperience, even putting your hand there. Now, I think Casey played for it, but don't put your hand there.
No, it was obvious enough. He was left-handed on as well, and the referee was at that side of as well, so it's very easy for the referee to give that free. Like, he made it too easy for the referee. The first one he gave, I'd agree with you, it was very, very harsh. He blocked him down brilliantly, and he went he had him under pressure, and I think even Graham McCarty was surprised he got the free of that one. But no, with the last one that went in there, he just made it too easy for the referee to give the free on it, you know what I mean? But then again, that comes with experience. There's a lot of space in front of him. I'd say he panicked a bit when the ball was coming in. That look, especially with them conditions, if you let the corner forward get it at that position, hold him up, he's still 30 or 40 yards out. He'll have to hit off the back foot. Very, very, very hard score to get anyway. But again, he jumped in. He was kind of too anxious to get the ball. But again, a bit of experience, then he would have stood back and make the corner forward play it, you know. But again, look, valuable experience for him to take off the team. But I think he's a good player now, in fairness to him.
Yeah,
looks comfortable on the ball.
He does. That's definitely the thing. Like, I mean, you'll tell any player, let them score from play at that stage. The referee's going to look to level this up. Don't give them any excuse. He wants to level it up. You have to have that in your head. He's trying to find a foul here to make everyone go home happy.
As a crowd pleaser is.
Don't give it. There was a pitch inspection in the Laois Dublin match. Now, the Laois Dublin match was played in terrible conditions. Laois were winning most of the game. Then they went the last 20 minutes without getting a score. So, like, I mean, it shouldn't have. It was saying that, like, any player trying to change direction or stop and sprint cause players to fall theatrically. So, like, I mean, it was farcical by all accounts by reading the... It was just a battle that Leash were well up for and were well able, well in the game. Matty Kenny was interviewed afterwards and he said, "I thought Liam Rush was immense today with the bout of ball he got. Liam was obviously picked at full forward, but he came out in the half forward line and he was getting on some ball and getting in some amount of tackles. So in the last quarter, we moved Danny Sutcliffe up full forward. Oisin was after coming on. I thought Oisin was very sharp." Didn't know much about Danny Sutcliffe playing in the full forward line. He's in a rich vein of form, Brian. Is this somewhere where he's been in and around before? Is this a Matty Kenny experiment?
No, he's probably more accustomed to the half forward line or even midfield, but look, he's such a class talent, and maybe they might have looked at trying to expose Matthew Whelan, a full back, then as well, because Matthew obviously would love the whole idea of high ball coming in top from it and physically dominated. So they might have thought that they could have got him out from the edge of the square, maybe at that stage. And look, I suppose they were trying to just try different things and bring players into the game, but you know, there's two hugely experienced players there for Dublin. Liam Rush, like, he's on the go a long time as well, and so versatile. He's played absolutely everywhere for Dublin, so you know, he seems to be knuckling down again this league, and like, he's setting himself up for a good championship. Hopefully he hasn't been scoring a lot now in this league, but you know, at least he's getting back in there and getting game time under his belt, because he can be a huge player for Dublin too.
Yeah, exactly. So Leash lost the game. They were well in at the hut. It was 13-11 it finished up. Like, I mean, Leash went into an early lead. Leash are now in the quarterfinals, so they play Limerick. So we have one quarterfinal decided. We know Westmead are going up to Division 1A next year, or Division 1A. So they're definitely going to be in the thick of it with all the teams. We were trying to name them out last Thursday of who was actually going to be in that. So Westmead are going to have...
We don't know for definite who's up, by the way, because it's the league final.
Oh, Westmead play Kerry. Sorry, that's it. So Westmead play Kerry in the league final.
Carlo and Offaly are playing... Is it next week again?
Carlo and Offaly
playing next week again. In Tullamore.
Okay.
So we did you a big massive favour that we said we'd do for you during the week, Willie.
Here, hang
They're
on.
After Leash, lads, but
hang on, anyway. Buddy. I predicted that. I said Offaly'd win that. I predicted Offaly to win that. I said that's it. Offaly, like, won't be losing to Carlow. But this was another... Did you hear much about this? I know you had your own game, Brian. This was another terrible conditions. Joe Berg and Shane
terrible
Dooley. It's not rocket science when you get your best players back and going well. Like, I mean, that's it.
Yeah, no, in fairness to the two boys, look, for four goals between them, and look, sir, it's exactly what you need. They've obviously a wealth of experience. They've been two of Offaly's best forwards in for a long, long time now, and, you know, they are your go-to men. So Shane slowly getting back to fitness, but look, he's obviously class when he's in form. And Joe's been back for the last couple of league games, and he's coming back into form as well. So look, it's brilliant. It's amazing. We had such a poor league up to now, but the performance have been slowly improving, and you know, that was a big win, because it's supposed to set the scene to Carlo ahead of next week. That, you know, James Hickey's famous statement of being 10 points a worse team than Carlo is. Hopefully we'll come back to roost next weekend if we can.
Does he never forget by you that?
Oh, well, I've reminded him recently.
Exactly. I've been reminded of that. Hold on now.
So, like, I mean...
I see, though, Leash have home advantage now against Limerick in the league. And
oh, they won the toss, did they? Well, I didn't...
They won the toss. That's Saturday night at 7 p.m. in O'Moore Park.
Oh,
and, like, that one league quarterfinal is going ahead next Saturday. And the other three matches are down for next Sunday at 2 p.m. So, we'll have one quarterfinal decided. And the other three won't be played till the week after.
Right, okay. See, that's the thing. And the last round of the league games, they all had to be played the Sunday. The Saturday night would have been well playable, like, this weekend. So is everybody back from Offaly now, Brian, or what's the story? Like, I mean, because I saw you retweeting an article and I read it. It was about Offaly not being in the Leinster Championship and the kind of apathy around the county and, you know, players not wanting to commit and everything. Is that case? Because you were saying in the very first show that it was more players being injured and stuff that...
Yeah, we still have a few boys injured still to come back. The likes of Bush and Kelly and Keelan Kiley.
How far are they away?
Seemingly the most fighting creatures are in the league at all, but that's a bit of a pity. But I suppose there's only one week left in the league for us, so but hopefully we'll have him back for the Joe McDonough. I was about to say Leinster Championship, but no, the Joe McDonough
can't say that this
cup,
year.
So no, can't say that. Yeah, look, there are other players within Offaly that are you know, should be involved in the county setup for many various reasons. But like it gets frustrating people, probably to the people on the ground here in Offaly, to know that there are other people that should be in there. And you know, as I said, look, at some of it's their own personal choice, some of it was taken by the manager, and you know, there are a couple of issues at play. If we had everyone, like I firmly believe we'd be still in the Leinster Championship. But with the current guise of the Leinster Championship, do I think we could survive in it? I don't think so either, being honest, because right. I still think we'd get a hard push to beat anyone in the current Leinster Championship. We might run teams a bit closer, but essentially, you know, it's not like these players are going to suddenly make us into Leinster winning team or an Ireland winning team. So we'd still struggle under the current system of the Leinster Championship. So
I see Kevin Martin's adding to his backroom team. So he's recruited a sports psychologist, Anne-Marie Kenny, as well as Olympian Dave Matthews to his backroom team. So, I don't know much. I think Dave Matthews has taken the fitness.
Strength and conditioning,
Strength and conditioning.
Kevin sacked the strength and conditioning guy after the Watford debacle.
That again? Remind me.
Well, when Watford beat us by 20-something points.
Oh, the hammering, right. Okay.
I don't know. Obviously, I'm not in there. It's just bad optics, I suppose. We took a heavy beating and the strength and conditioning guy gets blamed. But I'm sure there was more to it than that, because it wasn't just strength and conditioning that day. That's him in there. So in terms of the sports psychology, I suppose, look, it is tough from an Offaly perspective. Like, everybody in Offaly, there's such apathy. Everyone's telling you, every dog in the street, even probably parents and relations, are telling players, like, what are you doing in there? What are you wasting your time for? You know, you're going nowhere. I suppose there does have to be some sort of psychology brought into play to try and arrest that and try and put a stop to it and build players' minds, because it is tough. You know, it's huge negativity here.
Yeah, no doubt. I was doing a bit of research. I was supposed to interview a Limerick player, and it's fallen true for now. Might talk to him later on in the championship. But I was doing a bit of research and mentioning the sports psychology, and it was Caroline Curid is with them, and she was telling them not to play on emotion. She said, if you play on emotion, you play in peaks and troughs. You remove the emotion, you find the consistency. And I thought it was a really, really interesting thing, because every bloody GAA speech I've heard in my whole life has been based off emotion.
They're doing it for the parish.
We're doing it all our ways. We're going out going, rah!
She'd be all zen walking out into the field, isn't it?
Well, isn't that interesting, though, to say remove emotion and you'll get the consistency in your game? That you're not, because I suppose if you are basing it on emotion all the time, then what happens if you're not playing your fierce rivals, and what if you're not, you know, playing something that you need an emotional speech to get you up for, that you should be able to do that naturally?
I say throughout the year now, you'd be hoping you get that balance, but come Ireland final, semi-final, and if you're playing your neighbours, wherever it is, your emotions are going to go through the roof as well, and just kind of trying to balance that as much as you can. Throughout the year, if you can get the balance right, you'll be thereabouts 100%. You'll actually play to your potential, but there's certain games and certain aspects and certain times during games that your emotions will take over. You're only human at the end of the day, but you have to try and get it up and get back down to where you should be as quick as you can, really, more than anything. You're not going to waste. I agree with what you're saying, but it's probably throughout the whole year, if you can gather that kind of zen-like thing throughout the year, but there is times that your emotion will take the battery and you'll just kind of go on your instincts, really, more than anything. That's
the thing. But
I don't know how Davey survives, because you know, when the whole world's against him and he's a little fish, I don't know how he keeps these players going.
Well, let's just say Davey wouldn't be hiring Caroline Curran anytime. I don't think they get on too well. But the greatest example of this one, and it's a real confusing one, is the 1996 All-Ireland. Right, Wexford and Limerick. So Limerick come out tearing out into the field, passion, run out into the field, and they're come tearing out of the dressing room. Wexford walked out. Remember Martin Story leading them out, and they just walked out, casual, cool, calm. Wexford won the game, but Limerick got the better start. Yeah. Isn't it a strange one, isn't it?
It's crazy, actually, when you think about it, right? Yeah, but Wexford were probably known for their passion and their pride and everyone like that as well. And probably people looking out and saying, jeez, are they ready to play this game at all? But again,
it was strange in hurling to see them just saunter out, wasn't it?
If you can win, you can justify. You're supposed to come out of the dressing room and take the door off the hinges and drive out through everyone, hit the closest person too, you know, and I'll get out in the field as quickly as possible. But yeah, it's funny the way it happens, or the way it works out.
It definitely is. The Walsh Park news then, Derek McGrath was very honest, I thought, last night, which, look, it's hardly a surprise to hear that Derek McGrath is honest. He's honest to a fault. A lot of the time, he said that he wasn't forceful enough, and he shouldn't have accepted Walsh Park not being their home venue. And it took the Newbridge or nowhere thing, Brian, for him to realise, Jesus, we could have actually made a stand here and said that the home advantage is a huge thing, as everybody knows in sport, and they should have fought for it that bit harder.
Yeah, like, you'd feel for Derek McGrath, because, like, he's so honest, as you said. He's actually taking this blame all on his own, which, you know, like, let's be fair, it's not just Derek McGrath's fault. I know he'd say he was, you know, the leader, the manager that should have put his foot down, but there was many more, you know. It was the whole county board, the pressure of the Munster Council. You know, they even looked to try and have their games in Nolan Park, as far as I can remember, and that Kilkenny were happy enough to allow both games to go ahead in Nolan Park, so at least it was easy access for their supporters, or a lot easier for their supporters. And that was even turned down. So I suppose they just felt they had no choice. But I suppose the Newbridge or nowhere gathered massive media exposure, and the whole country got behind Kildare from that perspective. Because you could see, you know, how ridiculous a decision was. But, you know, the most disappointing thing from that perspective is the recent decision at Central Council that more or less removed that from the counties now that they're able to do that, because CCCC or many amount of C's it is, are able to just make a decision now on health and safety grounds.
Yeah,
we have listened to that bullshit excuse of health and safety grounds in Offaly for the last 15 years since Borough's been removed. So that was the excuse that kept thrown time after time at everyone in South Offaly. That's why the reason we weren't allowed to use Borough, and it always had to be in Tullamore. Very annoying.
Right, and you're, like, I mean, are you still looking for the Borough? Borough is the spiritual home of Offaly hurling, and you'd prefer to play there still?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I know people are going to roll their eyes to heaven over this one, but yeah, we'd be a lot happier to hurl our league games in Borough and hurl our club championship matches in Borough. And obviously, it's a no-brainer that the championship matches are in Tullamore.
Right.
You know, that's a given. But yeah, the league and club championship in particular should be in Borough. And we've hurling people have long looked for that, and it just seems to have fallen on deaf ears. And as I said, the health and safety was the one thrown at us for a long time now.
Right, okay, so you're all excused out with that one. What do you think, JJ?
Yeah, even when we were going playing Offaly before, never liked going to Borough. It's just the whole history of the name, the club, what they're after achieving as well. Like, the whole thing plays in your mind when you're going up there as well, and you never enjoy going up there. So yeah, I fully agree with what Brian's after saying there as well. That first thing that I think of when Offaly's home pitch would be Borough as well, and we played there a few times as well, and we had great games against them too, but very tight field and the crowds in the top. It is just brilliant atmosphere to play into, you know, kind of way. So I can really fully appreciate where Brian is coming from with that one.
Right, okay. Come here, Mike.
Well, the worst is, Wooly, just for 1 second, the worst is that other counties were able to pick and choose county venues as they saw fit. We see Monaghan playing in all their club grounds.
Yeah.
They spread it around to four or five different club grounds. You know, Limerick at times has had to play in Kilmallock. I played them in Kilmallock myself. You know, so there's Wexford, we played in New Ross one time, so there's lots of various reasons that you can play outside of your designated county ground.
Parking as well, sure.
I suppose after the Offaly County Board paying so much money on O'Connor Park, they want to get use out of it. No, I suppose that's a big one.
Yeah, but there you go, and that's my counter argument. That is, that's a monetary decision. You're not putting what's most important is your players, your supporters, and maybe you might be able to influence results. Somewhat, even if it's only in the mind, it doesn't matter, because sometimes it's all in the mind. So it's disappointing to see monetary decision ruling over everything else, you know.
But yeah, it's just on that monetary thing now, while we have it brought up, I might as well get your two hurling opinions, JJ. I'll start with you. What do you make of Dublin footballers getting two Super 8 games in Croke Park? What do you make? Do you think Croke Park's a home venue for them?
It definitely is a home venue. Yeah, from a non-educated football game
you're
of a guy.
You're educated. You're a footballer too. You're a dual star.
Look, it's very, very straightforward that Croke Park is their home game. Any time I see Dublin playing on at home in the league, it's in Croke Park.
Yeah.
Any time we see him playing championship, it's in Croke Park. So for me to be looking at it, yeah, 100% that Croke Park is. Why should they have two games there? I just don't agree with it. I know there's an argument with Parnell Park, so there's only X amount can watch it. Again, we had that conversation from Newbridge there last year. It's only one game throughout the whole year.
Yeah.
Why not make them play in their actual home game as well, or let them admit that Croke Park is their home game, one or the other? Because it's just every game we see Dublin footballers playing on telly when they're at home, or they are playing in Dublin within the county, it's in Croke Park.
Yeah.
So to me, that's their home game.
Yeah.
They've
admitted it now, Brian. They've given them their home game in Croke Park in the Super 8, so it is their home ground. Like, I mean, there's actually no debate about that anymore.
No, there's no debate, and they don't care, because as far as they're concerned, it is all about money. And, you know, Dublin is their cash cow, and they need them going as well as possible. And you kind of heard that yourself from Tom Ryan in your own interview, the importance of keeping Dublin up there at the top. And, you know, they fully stand over all the money that they give to them in terms of their coaching and everything. So they're happy enough to back it and keep going as long as it's possible. But what's worse is, in fairness to Jim Gavin and his players, they would have no problem if they're playing anyone up north, playing them in Clonus, or, you know, anyone down south coming down to Thurles. Sure, they love it, in fairness to them. They're the best that's possible, and they never fear playing anyone in whatever venue that they're asked to play in. And I think, in fairness, like, they've taken their lead from Kilkenny in that perspective too, because you were very happy, JJ, like, even at underage, no problem handing over home advantage in Leinster finals and stuff like that. I've seen them do it with Laois and Westmeath and stuff. So, you know, sometimes if you're going to be the best, you know, you're not afraid of taking on these teams outside of your home venue. So it's just disappointing from the top brass perspective, because again, it is, as you said, a monetary decision.
Yeah, no, it definitely is disappointing. Quickly, I want to ask you about performance coaches. Now, I talked to Damien the other day about this, and there seems to be a takeover in hurling circles with Gaelic footballers coming in as experts. And I'm cynical about it. I don't know really what they could bring a hurling setup. Kieran Donaghy's gone to the Galway Hurlers. Kieran Donaghy's a brilliant, brilliant fella. He's an All-Ireland winner. He is an inspirational type of fella. He'd be a great talker. The Galway players are all-Ireland winners. Mm. Like, there's player of the years there. Like, I mean, I'm not sure what he could tell them. He can't tell them anything technically from hurling. I don't know what he can teach them about winning. Maybe there is something. I was making the point, it's not even an easy gig for Kieran Donaghy to come into a team. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? You have Desi Farrell gone into the Dublin Hurlers. It might be a bit easier for him. He's won an All-Ireland. They haven't. Oisín McConville was in with the Laois Hurlers. That would be an easier one. This is how, you know what I mean? The winning mentality, all those kind of things. Kieran McGeaney was in with Tipperary. Probably a more difficult one with him. They were All-Ireland winners. It's a weird one, isn't it? Damien was of the opinion that you're just looking for a new voice and an extra edge.
Yeah, I suppose, look what Kieran Donaghy's is after bringing to the table, or what he done with Kerry. And I suppose the whole mentality behind what his team done with Kerry as well, they done a couple, like, they were consistently up at the top table for a long, long time. And I suppose, Donaghy was probably looking at, like, we kind of fell at the last hurdle last year. What can we do extra now this year again? An extra vice like that, I think you bring an air of confidence. Kieran seems to be a very, very confident guy. Like, and he played very, very confident. He played very, very vocal as well on the field. And even if he expresses that much in that, when you're on the field, express yourself. Like, there's no issues in you shouting at the guy next to you, or get him going, because he was always kind of very vocal like that way. And he was a leader for his own Kerry team. Everyone looked up to him when he was playing. So if he can get a couple of players going that extra 5 or 10% that they didn't have last year, that would bring Galway back up in contention again. They won't be in contention anyway, but if Kieran Donaghy can bring on 3 or 4 of them players who went below their own par there last year, if they can bring back up to where they went 2 years ago, the sky's their limit for that Galway hurling team as well. Like.
So you would be pro footballers coming in. What do you think, Brian? You're not getting defensive now or anything about Gaelic footballers taking over the small ball game or anything like that?
Yeah, totally alien. Go away. don't be bringing your problems into our game now. Thank you very much. We're nearly getting rid of our sweeper system, so we're nearly back to the...
Well, you're diving now and everything, so you're being infiltrated.
Exactly.
Is there any coincidence here?
You have it ruined. Look, I think we're looking for fine margins at this stage when you're bringing in people like that. I think it can get a little bit complicated, over-complicated. Maybe it's too simplistic a view, and maybe I just don't have the insight anymore, being outside the tent for the last couple of years. But, you know, but if Kieran Donaghy's the one that's going to motivate you, it more or less says enough about yourself, really. get on with it. There's, sometimes home truths are needed, and you need to look yourself in the mirror and stop looking for crutches, as far as I'm concerned. You don't need any outside influence. Like, hurling's a very primal game from that perspective. I know there's tactics and all that, but it is very much win your own battle and win your own ball and get yourself in the best form as possible. Obviously, you have to be supporting that, but sure, isn't that what your manager's job is to do, like, essentially?
Well, I'm very old-fashioned in this kind of thing, and I, like, a performance coach for me now would be gobbledygook, and there's no need for it, and I'd be of Brian's opinion there. But I suppose when you look at it as well, another thing, I think it's a fad. I think it's because Dublin footballers got in Bernard Dunne as performance coach, and he's walking around, and whatever he's saying to the players, I'm too cynical and too old for it. And a point Brian makes there, maybe I'm too long out of the intercounty game to even know what these lads do or what they're. I just don't see what I don't get it. And I do think it's a fad. But then you have to look at it, and if he only helps two fellas, isn't two fellas being helped in any way you can help them better than none? So I don't know what to think about it, JJ.
Look, again, these things will, if you win the All Ireland, God will go on to win the All Ireland this year, it's the best thing ever done, you know, that kind of way. So, and if they don't win, sure, it'll be forgotten fairly quickly as well, like, you know. So it's just hard to know. But in regarding football, people commit to hurling, but our own one, it would be Michael Dempsey coming in from Leash there as well.
Yeah.
Now again,
that's the big one.
He's not a performance coach, but he was strength and condition and then fitness as well. He's probably the best example ever of a football guy coming in to first to Martin Fogarty. He was involved in under-21s for a couple of years previously before he came in with Brian Cody, and Martin brought him on board in under-21s, done his apprenticeship there, and then went on. Brian Cody's been there for the last 10-12 years as well, like, you know. So there's one good thing he gave us anyway, Leash man as well.
Go on, Brian.
But the job of the people that are constantly sending the messages, so you're different types of coaches, like your strength and conditioning coach or your fitness coach, whatever you want to call them, should they not be having that message coming across all the time to the players? Similar enough with your hurling coach and obviously the manager, that they're all in the one wavelength and they're putting the message across. And don't they have, like, if they do want players with that individual touches, and that's what all the coaches and all this big massive backroom team is about, to me there's a little bit of PR involved. And, you know, it's just, look, it's a fad, I think, I suppose, is the only way of putting it. And, you know, where does it stop, though? Like, cause the backroom teams are becoming massive. They're nearly an extra bus now at this stage.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, if next year someone has a ballet dancer with a ballet background, like, will we want to keep them light on their feet? Like, does everybody start getting that, or do you need a ballet?
I heard that similar enough with Bikram Yoga there for a while. There was a few teams doing Bikram Yoga, and then suddenly that became the buzz thing to do in the off-season. And obviously, McGeaney obviously had lads up doing boxing and
MMA
and some of the teams and MMA, exactly. And then suddenly all the teams want to follow that. You know, essentially it does come down to players, individuals, finding deep inside them what their reason is, what their why is. And, you know, you need to become strong in the mind. You might need a little bit of help in that. There's no problem with that. But I think the performance coaches are just it's a fad, I suppose.
Fad. And we had Cheddar Plunkett, right? A stalwart of the GAR. He brought the Leash hurlers around to different landmarks of Leash and explained the history to it and explained them who the people of Leash they were representing and gave them a bit of bloody pride in the jersey. Who needs a performance coach when you have Cheddar Plunkett, lads? Like, I mean,
he's all in one, isn't he? You can do it all in fairness to him.
Come here, we'll just finish on this, lads, because I have you long enough. This is all we're doing today because we've seen no games and we're not going to bullshit anybody listening about matches that we haven't seen. And obviously that interview fell through, which was going to bump it up to the hour. Joe Quaid was tweeting the Sunday game last night, Westmead manager and friend of this show. Not even a mention of all the other games that went ahead in the rest of the divisions in the hurling league today. Elitist coverage, games promotion, my arse. So, like, I mean, Joe has a point. We talk about the big games more. We're not a public service broadcaster. Like, I mean, public service broadcasting shouldn't care necessarily about ratings. They're servicing the public. And, like, I mean, this is our national games, and Westmead have gone top, and Kerry, they play Kerry in that final. And Jesus, it definitely should have got a mention. And there's a good little story in Westmead anyways, because Joe's a great character. And, like, I mean, bring him on as a guest pundit last night with Derek McGrath or something like that. It's not an easy, it's not a difficult thing just to give it a bit of a mention.
Especially last night with all the games. Yesterday with all the games called off as well. There was wide open for an extra 10-15 minutes. I know they spoke about Walsh Park a bit more. They could have took out that segment and just put in something about the Westmeath game there yesterday as well. But yeah, look, you can feel for him right now. He's trying to promote the game within the county as well. And even just 5 minutes on Sunday Sport there last night would have been a huge... huge lift for the players. One of them sitting at home last night after winning on cloud nine, after winning the game, sitting down on their couch watching that last night, would have been brilliant for them. Like, you know, the kind of way they're going to have to look at that with you. Like,
I can only imagine, Brian, what it would be like for a Westmeath hurler after topping the group, winning five, beat Kerry away and beat Antrim away, you know, getting into that league final, and for it not even to be acknowledged on the highlight show. That would be very, very demoralising. Now, like, players don't play for coverage on the Sunday game or anything. You play for the love in the game and stuff. But for it not to be acknowledged,
it does help, though.
Yeah, it does, a lovely little touch if you do get mentioned on the Sunday game.
And I think they're a little bit facetious if they're not admitting to the fact that it is actually nice if you are on Sunday game, especially if you're not used to it. Like,
yeah,
all right, for like the JJ there, no offence, and they're in All Ireland, you know, year in, year out, like, and they're household names, but. You know, there's savage hurlers in Westmead and Kerry and all these places. I mean, savage hurlers, like, and they're just not getting their day in the sun. And I can see a much wider issue why there's resistance from the football to go into this two-tier system as well, because they just know, having looked at what's happened, the Joe McDonagh Cup and the Christie Ring, where there's absolutely zero exposure to the game, that it just falls off a cliff. But there's a much wider issue, and before you accuse me of having my RTE cap on for a second, I do think they are restrained. Like, they would have set up what games they thought were going ahead, and they would have sent off their, you know, their cameras to those grounds, and then obviously they don't have cameras in the likes of the Westmeath games or the Offaly Carlow or whatever, Laois and Dublin. But I actually think we're being a little bit hard on RTE, and actually it should be back on the GAA, because it goes back to the rights that they've given to the different sort of companies. Like, Sky have the most amount of evenings in which to run their
highlights.
What's called as a highlights package, exactly. And they're not using them, and it's just ridiculous. Plus, I think, and again on a much wider thing, I think the GAA has huge scope to have a GAA channel, GAA TV. I'd gladly pay a prescription to GAA TV as opposed to pay it to Sky Sports. To watch games, and I think the amount of games that there are across all codes, all age groups, that could be videoed. We're not asking for, you know, hugely professional productions here or anything like that, but, you know, how many times do we watch club games up and down the county with just one camera and a local commentator, and lads are just happy enough with just once you get to view them. So I just think the GAA probably should take a little bit more control there, and potentially, which they'll like to hear, make a little bit of money off it, and God forbid that they only break even.
I do take your point. Looking for highlights of Westmead, because they hammered Mayo, you're not really going to be shown the highlights. But like, the top group 2A, to acknowledge that, you could have got Joe Quaid up on a Skype call, you know what I mean, or do some sent down. They could have kind of given them some sort of coverage. Just mentioning the Sunday game, do you remember the first time you ever got a mention? I played well in my debut for Laois, and I remember Martin Carney did a package on my display on the Sunday game that night. This was a huge moment in my life. I still remember it. Like, it was massive. I recorded it. My mother recorded it. I was actually in the pub that night in Port Laois, and it came on, and I couldn't hear it. I was like, what's he saying? He's doing a package of it. And I couldn't wait to get home, because I knew my mother would have had it recorded to see. But
you're
right.
You're looking at out to one eye with about a feed of pints in you, and you're trying to figure it out.
Like, I was trying to shush a whole pub. What's he saying about
talking
me?
About me.
But no, you're
right. I remember
one
of my first ones was Cyril Farrell's famous. He's a lovely wristy hurler.
Yeah. did you get described by him as a wristy hurler? You did. Well, who did?
Back in the day.
Fantastic. I'm sure JJ, do you remember your first
kind of... Yeah, it's unbelievable, like, you know what I mean, because look, you're growing up watching that as well, like, you know, and you're sitting down every Sunday evening, watch the highlights when you're mentioned, then you're absolutely over the moon, like, working about it. It's no point in saying the difference. It's absolutely huge.
Did Cyril Farrell ever say you're a
wristy
hurler?
No, never a wristy hurler.
I'd say he's described me as a wristy hurler at this stage with Cyril. Is that like a big ambition for a hurler, to get wristy hurler off Cyril? Is there like a drinking game you do that night watching
it's the corner forward club, I'm afraid, is all looking for that.
That's all that gets that. That's all that gets that. Yeah. Right. Well, listen, lads, I've kept you long enough and everyone else. Just to say we've done well there. We might have got up to about 50 minutes there when we've no hurling on the telly. So we've done fairly
done
well. Come here. We'll be back on Thursday as usual with a review show and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.